This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wild lands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today we're interviewing Sean Grace. He's the president of the Hawk Mountain Sanctuary in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. So, welcome, Sean. It's great to be talking with you. So, there are individual birds that deviate from the flyways. You can find them all across the country, even in basin areas.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think, like, when you look at wildlife, it's almost looking at, like, a map of a river. And you can see headwaters, which are tiny little trickles or streams or seeps, and then they become creeks. And then the creeks become, you know, larger creeks. And then eventually those funnel into rivers and then really large rivers.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like an artery system, if you can imagine. And that's the way oftentimes, you know, wildlife, when it's migrating, they'll stick to major routes, and then they eventually start to break up and go up into their individual habitats and their individual territories that they're claiming. But it's interesting, you know, because the Kittatinny Ridge, it doesn't act just as a migration route for raptors in the daytime.
Uh-huh.
It also acts as a migration corridor for nocturnally migrating songbirds. And in the fall, when songbirds, they migrate in the spring and in the fall, but in the fall, we can get really big fall out in the morning when nocturnal migrants are migrating, and then they go down to roost and forage in the woods. Before then rising up in the nighttime and continuing their migration. And so an area like in Pennsylvania where we are, we could expect 60 to 70 species of neotropical migrants that migrate to raise their young in our woods. And it's interesting, you asked about partnerships. Hawk Mountain has been asked by the state of Pennsylvania to step up and do the third ever bird atlas, which is an entire breeding bird atlas.
Wow.
For every bird in the state of Pennsylvania, in every single county, not only on the breeding times during the spring and summer, but also to do the winter bird survey. So it's an entire year bird atlas. Some of them are just, you know, breeding bird atlases. But they know, because, you know, we have really serious scientists and we have a great reputation, they asked us to partner with them in order to pull that off. And so that's a five-year project. We're currently through our first year and working on our second year. And we've hired a scientist, Amber Wewell, and she's the person that's heading up that program. But it's a great opportunity for folks that are here in Pennsylvania to participate and log your information. And there's ways via the protocol that Amber has set up where you can log into online, and you can register your bird species lists right online. So, yeah.
That's
another example of work that Hawk Mountain does. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me come back to the flyway. Running north from Hawk Mountain, where does the flyway go? On up into New England and to Mount Katahdin, Maine?
It keeps following right up into points north. And, you know, there are jump-off points where raptors will jump over a ridge and head north.
Uh-huh.
That's the general, because there's an area where the Green Mountains split off from the White Mountains. And, but the general flow is sort of north and to points south.
Uh-huh.
And it's also interesting, like we talked about, you know, diurnal raptors, nocturnal bird migrants, but there's also like seven different species of bat that utilize the Appalachian Corridor to migrate at night. And this area here in Pennsylvania, it has the Kittatinny Ridge, but as we go north, and we're on the eastern side of the state, as we go north and west, it's the ridge and fold area of Pennsylvania. And if you were to think of several carpets stacked on top of each other and then kind of smushed together, and you have these rises and falls, so you have valley bottoms and then steep, you know, ridges on either side.
Mm-hmm.
Those create innumerable microclimates. Some of those slopes are north-facing and never see the sun. Some are baked by the sun all day. You have the differences in temperatures between the tops of the ridges and the very bottoms that, you know, are moist and oftentimes have streams.
Mm-hmm.
And so this area is considered of national significance for climate resiliency. And that's a fancy way of saying there's lots of environments where plants can adapt to, and then in turn the birds and the mammals that feed on those and the insects that feed on those and pollinate those to adapt as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they are hotbeds, and this area is a hotbed for climate resiliency. And as, you know, as temperatures begin to rise, it offers opportunity for those plant communities to move north, and then the associated species to move along with them.
Describe a little more the landscape in at Hawk Mountain. I see it's largely forested, but are there some streams and waterfalls, and what kind of trees predominate?
Yeah, you know, if we were to go back over 100 years ago, we would have a largely chestnut, oak, hickory forest.
Hmm.
But with the chestnut blight, we saw a nearly 100% die-off rate of the American chestnut.
Wow.
And that was a disproportionately important food resource for many species, including the passenger pigeons, turkeys, blue jays, all your rodent species, bears, deer. That's now gone, and now we are largely in an oak-hickory forest matrix. And oaks are really important, not only because in the spring, as they flower and they begin to leaf out, they tend to be a host site for geometric moths, which are sort of the small inchworm moths, and those are very important for bird migration. And that's really what fuels in the spring when we start to hear new species of birds as they're arriving and see those. That's what they're feeding on. They're looking for those insects that have been there in the forest all winter, only in an egg form, and then they hatch as, you know, you reach a certain point where the sun gets high enough in the sky, so it's the temperature, how warm it is, but it's also the sun angle and the daylight and duration.
Uh-huh.
And that causes those changes to happen. The insects hatch, they begin to feed, and once that food resource is there, especially breeding males, they want to get to their breeding site if they can. So they'll, you know, oftentimes take a risk. Oh, it's warm for a little while. I'll push on further north. And they're gleaning and looking for insects. But that's sort of what fuels our bird migration in the spring when we see our birds coming back.
So a visitor.
So right now we're in an oak. So to answer your question, it's an oak and hickory forest. We do have a lot more blackbirds, which is wind dispersed. And that's something that we want to keep an eye on, how much of the forest turns into that. Recently, we've also seen more red maple spring up.
Uh-huh.
But the mature forest would be sort of oak hickory predominantly.
So a visitor to Hawk Mountain, could they expect to have some hiking trails? And could they camp there?
Yeah, so we have 8 miles worth of trails, and we also tie directly into the Appalachian Trail.
Uh-huh.
So folks could go out and, you know, pick up on the Appalachian Trail and not stop walking for another 1,000 miles.
There's
a variety of different habitats. We're buffered by rivers or streams on both sides of the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And there's great views from both our south lookout and from our north lookout. And our north lookout is 1 mile from our visitor center. You can take an ADA accessible trail up to our south lookout. As far as I know, we are the only organization that has a mountaintop ADA accessible trail. And it also ties into our amphitheater, where we put on a lot of public education programs.
Uh-huh.
In the fall, if you show up on a weekend, on any given Saturday or Sunday, we offer 9 free programs. So it's like 18 free programs on the weekends. And those are oftentimes held at our amphitheater. So folks could come in, they could see a Raptors Up Close program, or a trapping and tracking program about how we trap raptors and track them and what we do with the scientific data, or the history of Hawk Mountain. We offer a variety of programs. There are trainees as well as employees that are at our south and our north lookouts that, one, they do the counting, but they also do interpretation for folks and talk to them oh, this is why this we think this is a red-tailed hawk. It's way out there. How can you even tell it's a red-tailed hawk?
Yeah.
You know, and high-level raptor counting is like if we were in a store and somebody ducked around the corner that wasn't even facing us, and we're like, oh, that's my friend Paul. It's like, oh, how do you know it's Paul? It's like, well, Paul always has his head cocked to the side, and he's always got his right hand on his right hip. I know it's Paul. And we go up, and sure enough, it's Paul. But it's just knowing those nuances of different species and how they hold themselves, how they fly, what their wing beats are, how close and tightly do they circle. Do they flap, flap, glide, or do they flap, 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 glide? You know, it's like, how do they go about their, how do they carry themselves?
Uh-huh. And are there
things that they're learning. Yeah.
Are there campsites on the site or on at Hawk Mountain or in the vicinity?
Yeah, at a certain membership level, we do have campsites that we make available to members. I believe it's at a Bronwing level and higher, which is $125 membership and higher. And then we also even have two Adirondack shelters that people could access.
And you run
and then there is also the Appalachian Trail. We deeded lands to the Appalachian Trail some number of years ago. Again, our trails tie into the Appalachian Trail, and there's lots of camping right along the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, I see. So, and are those designated campsites, or is it just wherever you want to put down?
What I would encourage those folks is to check the rules and regulations of those specific areas.
Okay.
I know there's shelters along the way, and those tend to be a first-come, first-served. And then I know they have strongly suggested requirements on how close you can be to the trail. You always want to check what the local regulations are.
You run a summer camp program, is that right? Who's that for?
Yeah, that's for typically for kids in the primary grade. So first through sixth. And so we have a first through third and a fourth through sixth grade camp. And that's been a hugely successful program. We also do outreach programs for adults. We do field institute style programs, like programs on winter ecology or bird migrants, or we do field handling techniques for raptors. That's a five-day course people can take, where whether you're a budding scientist or just someone that's passionate about raptors, you can spend 5 days trapping, tracking, learning how to do all the measurements on raptors. If we're going to deploy a transmitter, you could see how that is done. So it's a combination of classroom time and field time. That's a hugely successful program. People, it always sells out. We offer programs like you could do a wilderness first responder, which is sort of like the guide medical certification that most guides would have. It's like an 80-hour medical cert. We do a winter artisan series. We have field trips for school groups. We work with homeschool groups. Of course, we have college level classes. We have our trainee program. And then certain folks continue on right up through pursuing a master's program, a graduate program, and then on to a PhD. And that's all, it's all part of what Hawk Mountain does.
So tell me more about the research that's being done at Hawk Mountain. What's the Appalachian Field Institute? Is this a research entity?
Well, so like we offer an Appalachian Field Ecology program. That's a program for high school students, but it's like a I'd say it's really more akin to a college-level field course.
Really?
We have four different PhDs that are involved in teaching that.
Uh-huh.
When we look at, like, the adult field institute-style programs, those are deep dives into any area of nature and natural history. So we have one on amphibians. We do the winter ecology program. We do raptor handling field techniques, and we've typically done that twice a year. In any given year, there's like three different college courses that are offered through a local university. And one of our former biologists that acts as our teacher for that, a fellow named Dan Hennebush. So there's, those opportunities as well.
What are the colleges or universities that you relate to?
Well, I would say that Hawk Mountain has relationships with many universities around the globe.
Oh, okay.
And those are primarily research-driven.
Uh-huh.
We have a very strong relationship with Kutztown University.
Uh-huh.
And they have annexed all of, we probably have the largest raptor library in the United States for manuscripts and books. And they've annexed our library, so that's an important relationship. And then there's also the local college consortium, and we do offer programs through one of the local colleges where folks can come out, and we're trying to currently work on expanding that.
What are the most common hawks that you see at Hawk Mountain, and hawks and owls that you see on the sanctuary?
Well, if I was to walk through it, let me see if I can't get them all for you. So the vultures, there's two species of vulture. There's the black vulture, and there is the turkey vulture. Black vultures are less migratory by nature. Turkey vultures are far more migratory.
Uh-huh.
If we look at the buteos are broad-wing, sort of tend to be more open-area soaring hawks we would normally think of them as, but that could include the broad-wing hawk, which is the smallest, and they typically actually nest in forests. There's the red-shouldered hawk, which is more of a wetlands buteo. There's the red-tailed hawk, which is sort of the classic. See them along field edges, along highways. And there's the rough-legged hawk, which is more from Canada and the North Country, and we typically only see them as a winter migrant. They come down here to the relatively balmy weather here in Pennsylvania, and then they head back north to breed. We then have a suite of falcons, which includes the kestrel, which we just, we have a kestrel nest box program where we have 126 kestrel nest boxes
Wow.
on local farmland properties.
Yeah.
We've been monitoring those for 70 years,
mm-hmm.
and we expanded that to include 8 states, I think 3 universities, 3 or 4 universities, 2 Canadian provinces, and studied the whole eastern population. Now, that our kestrel nest box program has been replicated in many other states. But we would, you know, what are you guys finding in your boxes? How many of them hit every year? How many of them
mm-hmm.
produce kestrels?
Mm-hmm.
What do you see? What are the changes? So we have the kestrels, we have the merlin, then we have the peregrine falcon. On the rare, very rare occasion, you'd get a jeer falcon, but those are few and far between. Then if we look at the eagles, we have the bald eagle. And again, those numbers have recovered dramatically. The last 2 years, we've set records. This year, we had 639 bald eagles migrate past our North Lookout.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have a population of golden eagles. Now, they typically come here later in the season. Then if we switch gears and we look at what have classically been known as the occipitas, but there's some changes going on there, that's the sharp-shinned hawk, which is a small blue jay to small, like sort of like fish crow-sized occipiter. They hunt birds, so if you're missing birds at your feeder, that's oftentimes one of the culprits. The other is the Cooper's hawk, which is the next size larger.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that's more sort of crow-sized, that we think of more typically classically crow-sized. And then the largest of those is the goshawk. And the goshawk, we've seen almost an entire extirpation of breeding pairs of goshawks in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be a lot more research done on that, but that may be being driven by their sensitivity to West Nile virus and the mosquito that carries them. Doesn't do well at higher latitudes or higher altitudes. So in areas, the only places they're typically seeing them is in areas where it's too cold for that mosquito species to survive.
Are there other kinds of birds that you keep collect information on?
Yeah, so we will we keep tabs on as many as 80,000 other migrants every single year. So we'll go up to the lookouts in the fall, very early in the morning, and we will look for fallouts of migrating birds. So again, many of your songbirds migrate at night and then go down to the forest during the daytime.
Uh-huh.
One, they don't have to worry about strong winds that are driven by the warming temperatures of the sun. They also don't have to worry about, you know, sharp-shinned hawks and Cooper's hawks.
Mm.
I like to think of it as akin to, like, when I was a kid, you would watch shows and they would have the wolves that would follow the herds of caribou.
Yeah.
I kind of look at occipitas in the same way. They're following the large flocks of migrating birds, and
uh-huh.
that's what they feed on. So we keep tabs on those. And then also in the daytime, we'll see, that's where you'll see swallows and swifts. That whole cadre of birds, and also waterfowl. So we'll see big skeins of waterfowl Here in Pennsylvania, we have sometimes well north of 100,000 snow geese migrate down.
Wow.
And then also like 3,000 tundra swans. So you can see large pushes of those, and
sure.
Canada geese and cormorants and loons and you name it.
Are there other kinds of animals that you keep track of? Reptiles and amphibians as well? Mammals?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you asked that. So we do have a population of eastern timber rattlesnakes, and those have been studied here. And some of those, they are captured and transmitters are inserted into them so they can learn where their hibernaculums are. And then that helps us guide us when we're doing things like, is that a sensitive area? We should relocate a trail. And it helps guide decision making around that. And then over the years, because we do have relationships with other local universities, we've had professors come in and do studies on chickadees. We're sort of on the area. Historically, we only had black-capped chickadees. And then we started to see Carolina chickadee species come in. And then we started to see hybridization.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're almost all of the chickadees that we see are in the hybrid zone.
Oh, really?
And the hybrids are less robust and less likely to survive. So we have somebody that's been studying those for years and color tagging them and doing studies to see can they find faster ways to get into food resources. And so we've had people that have studied those. And the Hawk Mountain also has the longest standing data on forest birds. That includes winter surveys on select plots of land, and then breeding surveys on select plots of land.
Uh-huh.
And we have those going back more than 40 years. So we also have the longest standing bird data of any organization in Pennsylvania. And I think it's just interesting that, you know, our founders, Rosalie Edge, and then this tenacious and really sort of driven person in Maurice Bruin, who started documenting everything that he was seeing and keeping tabs on it. From that, you find that other people are super passionate about raptors and they want to share in that. And, you know, now it's 90 years later and the organization has continued to grow and prosper. And we're doing all of this, you know, exciting research here and around the globe. And it's just nice that I'm able to work in it, but I'm just very passionate about it and, you know, really happy to share the work that we do.
So have you seen any effects from climate change?
You know, it's interesting. You know, it's that's one of those tricky subjects and kind of a loaded question sometimes. What I will tell you is that in warmer winters, oftentimes raptors, they shortstop. And that is not a position on a baseball field.
Yeah.
It's when, at least in the raptor world, it's when they choose to stay up north until inclement weather reaches a point at which it's going to dry them south. It makes it, if you get lots of snow load, or if you get a foot of snow and then you get ice crust on top of that, it becomes hard for raptors to make meals out of
things
that are then safe and actually relatively warm and inviting of the snow to come along. Because for rodents, when they have a cover of snow on the ground, it makes for consistent temperatures below the snow. They're not subject to these wild swings in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
It's also relatively drier than it's going to be if they're, you know, in 33-degree or 34-degree wet, rainy conditions.
Yeah, right.
So actually, for rodent populations, their survival rates are much higher. But when the snow loads get too high up north or the weather gets too harsh, that's when we see it flush birds that have chose to hang out closer to their breeding grounds. And oftentimes when we get cold northwest winds and snow up north, those are great days to be up on the lookout the next day, because you'll see huge numbers of birds push past as they're trying to head south and find areas where they can hunt for food.
So Sean, as you look ahead to springtime, what kind of special events do you have on this calendar?
Yeah, you know, if folks go to hawkmountain.org, you can see all of our programs that are listed. And if you become a member, you get a calendar of events that covers the full year's worth of programs. Every spring, we have our annual gala. That's held in May. And then in August, we have Birds and Brew. And that usually coincides close to right around when our count starts. In another couple of weeks, we'll have a new suite of trainees come in. That's usually like six students from here in the United States, but also from places around the globe that come in that learn how to do raptor conservation work. And then they will leave sometime later in the summer, and then at the end of the summer, we'll have a new suite of trainees come in, and they'll be right here through November. And yeah, every weekend there's programs that are going on. Right now we have the Winter Artisan Series that's going on. The last Sunday of every month, you can do yoga on the mountain down at our Science Center. But people, they like to be able to go and see our science building, and it's got a great view, and it's got great hardwood floors, and people enjoy it. So
I think your website shows you do some eco tours.
Yeah. Yep. We also dabble in eco tours.
Where are they going?
Tours that have gone. It depends. I would reference the website, but we've done tours to Panama, Costa Rica, Bolivia, and we're also affiliated with Rap Tours, which is a separate enterprise, and that is currently run by one of our former trainees. And he does raptor tours all around the globe. So if you want to see rare and elusive raptors, that's an opportunity as well. I think last year we also went down to Veracruz, Mexico. The Veracruz River of Raptors is the single largest raptor count site on the globe.
Wow.
And that was established by one of our former trainees and current board member, Ernesto Ruelles Inzunza, and Dr. Lori Goodrich, who's our current director of conservation science.
Oh, great.
And Lori ran an eco tour down there.
Well, that sounds great.
They're always exciting trips and always great deep dives into not only the raptors, but also the cultural of those areas.
Right. Well, this has been a great tour of Hawk Mountain, and really appreciate your taking the time to talk to us and tell us about the raptors that you see. So thank you. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful talking to you today.
Yeah, Jay, thanks very much for having me on. If folks want to learn more, you can always go to our website. Just look for Hawk Mountain, hawkmountain.org, and you can find any of our programs. And a great time to visit is September and October, really any time of the year once we're out of snow season to do some hiking.
Great. Well, thanks very much. Our guest today has been Sean Grace. He's the president of Hawk Mountain Sanctuary in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana.
To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com to hear this and other interviews that we've done recently. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Shell.